You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Now, over the weekend, the Mets had a very exciting pair of home games on Friday and Saturday as they opened up capacity. Nearly sellout crowds now. We're at 90%, 30,000 fans screaming for Jacob DeGrom, MVP chance. All of it was so exciting to watch. And the Mets were able to beat a very good team in the San Diego Padres in those first two games behind outstanding pitching performances from DeGrom and Marcus Stroman. I'm going to talk about those games in the first segment. In the second segment of today's show, we'll talk a bit about what happened on Sunday as the Mets came up just short of the series sweep, but we saw another promising start from Joey Lucchese. And then finally in the third segment, I will preview the Mets' upcoming series against the Chicago Cubs, a four-game set that will begin tonight at Citi Field. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMerizeOnline.com. Now, as I sit here Sunday night recording this podcast, thinking back to Friday night, that was one of those games that I think you're going to remember this season because of the fans. It was palpable, the difference between opening things up and getting to the 90% capacity and seeing these packed crowds and hearing MVP chants for Jacob DeGrom. And it's not like we haven't heard some of those things and heard some cheers throughout the season, but Citi Field was rocking. Whether you were at the game, and if you were, I'm very jealous. That's an incredible time it seemed like you all had. If you were listening, though, you heard it. If you were watching on TV, you heard it, you saw it, you felt it. That is when Mets fandom gets to a different level, where it is just so fun to be part of this experience as you are appreciating a great team that goes in and night out and gives you something exciting to watch where you always feel like there's a chance to win. And when Jacob DeGrom's on the mound, there is a great chance to win. And he was sensational again. I don't even feel like I need to keep on piling on the superlatives and telling you how great he is and talking about what he does. He goes out, he doesn't give up runs, he strikes out everybody. That's Jacob DeGrom. That's your analysis. Every 5 days, I can get on here, hit record, and say Jacob DeGrom went out today. He struck out 10. He pitched 6 innings, didn't give up a run. He only allowed 1 hit. It's becoming routine, and that is the ridiculous part. But what I want to talk about is the fact that he came through again offensively. This should not be happening. A pitcher should not be one of the best hitters on your team, but Jacob DeGrom has been that this year. More importantly, one of the best run producers. So when you get this spot in the fifth inning, where it is a scoreless game, Kevin Pillar and Billy McKinney both hit doubles to put the Mets on the board, and you have a chance to put up a crooked number as Jose Peraza walks, you have two runners on as Jacob DeGrom steps up to the plate. You're sitting there and you're thinking, well, it's the pitcher spot. The Mets should bunt here, but it's DeGrom. They probably shouldn't. DeGrom squares, doesn't get the bunt down. Then Blake Snell balks, suddenly doing DeGrom's job for him, puts two runners in scoring position for Jacob DeGrom. And I cannot believe this is what happened. And more importantly, listen to what it sounded like.
Ahead on DeGrom 1-2.
And he runs with a left field for a base hit. McKinney is in. Peraza being waved to him. He will score. Jacob DeGrom drives in a pair, and it's 3-0 New York.
How ridiculous is this guy? Like, seriously, the fact that he just comes in each start, pumps in 101 nonstop, racks up all these strikeouts, and then when he needs some run support, goes out and gets it himself. Just ridiculous. Now, unfortunately, DeGrom left this start early because he had a sore flexor tendon. Everyone panicked, but right now, it seems like he's okay. He's in line to make his next start on Wednesday. And until we hear anything different, I think you just assume that Jacob DeGrom is going to be fine. At least that's the way the Mets are operating right now. Now, getting back to that game, it was not smooth sailing after DeGrom exited. Miguel Castro came in and gave up a couple of runs before leaving himself with a neck injury. Seth Lugo had to come in to clean up his mess, and he did just that. Lugo was great this weekend. You really started to feel his effect when it came to high leverage situations, getting some big outs there, and also pitching on Saturday night, getting three strikeouts in the scoreless inning. Edwin Diaz got the final four outs of the game for his 11th save. Aaron Loop contributed as well, getting two outs in that eighth inning. And the Mets get the victory. And then you go into Saturday's game, and the Mets pick up right where they leave off. Francisco Lindor, in the bottom of the first inning, who has been outstanding lately, has maybe that first big signature Mets moment at Citi Field where the fans can really embrace him. This is what it sounded like when he hit a two-run homer to give the Mets the early lead.
Grove, including that home run last Saturday. And he drives this one out to right center field. Back goes Grisham, looking up at the wall. It's out of here! Lindor against Musgrove again. This time a two-run homer, and the Mets have an instant 2-0 lead.
With that early two-run lead, Marcus Stroman was sensational. Through six innings, he had eight strikeouts and had not allowed a single run. He did give up a leadoff homer to Fernando Tatis Jr. in the seventh inning, then induced a groundout and issued his first walk of the game before being removed as Aaron Loop came in and got the final outs of that inning. Seth Lugo, as I already mentioned, pitched a scoreless inning, and then Edwin Diaz notched his 12th save of the season. The Mets won that game by a score of 4-1. Jonathan Villar homered as well in the eighth. But overall, you look at what this series means to the Mets, and over the past 2 weekends, they've played the Padres 7 times. They won 4 of those games. That's a really good team. And it's a measuring stick type set of series where you can look right up at your competition in the National League and say, hey, we can play with anyone. That's what these 2 games on Friday and Saturday showed you. And the Mets are at their best. They can beat anyone. And yes, on Sunday, they lost. And we'll get into that in a minute. But in that game on Sunday, you had a depleted bullpen. You had your 5th starter going. That was a house money game if you've ever had one. If the Mets won that, it would have been outstanding. But still, even by dropping that final game in the series, they're 7 games over 500. They're 3 games ahead of the Phillies in the division. The Mets are 17-6 at home. That's nearly a .740 winning percentage. And if you go back to the beginning of May, the Mets have only lost 2 series. They got swept by the Rays in the middle of April, and the following weekend, the Marlins beat them. Outside of that, they've won 9 series, and that's including a 1-game set where they had the 2 rainouts against the Braves. And they had the split against the Padres and the split against the Orioles this past week. That is remarkable. To win that many series, this is what it's all about. It's about winning each series you play. If you win 3 out of every 4 series, you're a playoff team. And the Mets are doing that. And they've been doing that since the beginning of May. At this point, it's fair to say that the Mets are the favorites to win the National League East. And there's no excuses if they don't at this point. They've already gone through more than you would have anticipated, and they're sitting in this position. They should be getting better, and they should be a team that can make a lot of noise this year. And this weekend just went on to prove that. In just a minute, I do want to talk, though, about how the Mets let an opportunity slip through their fingers on Sunday should they have won that game when they had a 2-1 lead in the 6th inning. I'll talk about that, and later on I will preview their upcoming series against the Chicago Cubs. Investing can be complicated. Whether you're a beginner or if you've been investing for years, Wealthfront is here to make it easy. They can create a portfolio of globally diversified, low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. No manual trades, no picking stocks, no watching the stock market every day. They automatically handle all the investing based on preferences you control. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. All you need is $500 to get started. You can grow your wealth the easy way and let Wealthfront do the work for you. Go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB to get your first $5,000 managed for free for life. That's WEALTHFRONT.com/lockedonMLB to start growing your savings today. Now, you never go into a game expecting to lose, but the Mets faced the Padres on Sunday with some long odds to win. Joey Lucchese was on the mound. He's your fifth starter, and while he has been great lately, he doesn't pitch deep into games. What makes that worse is you had Aaron Loop, Edwin Diaz, and Seth Lugo all having pitched in both of the first two games of this series, so you might not have had any of them available. Miguel Castro still dealing with the neck. The bullpen was not at 100% in a day where you need length out of your bullpen. That's not a good recipe for success. So the game begins, and Lucchese looked great again. And again, this is not to knock Lucchese. Talked about him a ton last week. He has fixed some things. They changed the arm angle. He is striking out a lot more batters. He has a lot more command. He looks great. And here's where people will begin to question Rojas. Because Lucchese, through five innings, had allowed just one run off a leadoff homer. Tommy Pham hit that one out. And from that point on, he didn't allow anything. Four hits, but he scattered them. He walked one, had six strikeouts. He looked in command. And so there was some clamoring for him to go deeper into the game, especially after we saw the results of when the Mets went to the bullpen and things eventually got off the rails and they blew this game. But let's really walk through the thought process for a manager in that spot. You have Lucchese, who, yes, through five, was looking very sharp. However, Tommy Pham hit the home run in the first inning. He would be leading off in the sixth. Tommy Pham, in his other at-bat, hit a 328-foot line drive to center field. Now, that wasn't a complete missile off the bat, but it shows that he was still seeing the ball well, that he squared it up and hit it to straightaway center. Then you have the other guys that were due up. Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr. Machado had a ball with an exit velocity of 107 against Lucchese. Tatis, 99.4 miles per hour. Will Myers, who might have batted, had an exit velocity on one of his at-bats of 102. Eric Hosmer, 98.7 and 111.8. Point being, the top of the Padres lineup was still hitting Lucchese hard in this start. That would be acceptable except for the fact that through his whole entire career, Lucchese has been bad facing a lineup for the third time through. I mentioned this last week, but for his career against a batting average of 312, on base percentage of 395, slugging percentage of 548. He wants to go deeper into games, and I get that. But the back of the baseball card says you probably shouldn't do that. Or maybe it's the advanced splits on baseball reference, however you want to frame that. Joey Lucchese is not going to face lineups three times for the foreseeable future. Unless the Mets have a change of heart and they want to see what it looks like. But in this game, when Jose Peraza gives you a surprising lead as he hits a two-run homer, the bottom of the fifth, you're looking at a chance to get a sweep against a great team. Are you going to send Lucchese out there, a left-handed starter, to face a lineup for the third time, for the first time this season, because he has not done that yet, against Tommy Pham, Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, Will Myers, four slugging righties? It's a completely rational decision to pull him from that game. So I cannot knock Rojas at all for it. And who does he go to? Jurys Familia, who's been lights out this year, who gets to face the top of that lineup where you want to use him at some point. Because you know you still have to go through that lineup twice. So you want Lucchese to face him, or not Lucchese, you want Familia to face him once, and you want May to face him probably the other time. Ideally in the ninth, if you can face the minimum and you just kind of get through the game and you somehow protect that lead, maybe you tack on. So that was Rojas's mindset. Get Familia against that top of the lineup. And he does that, and he actually got through it. Ends up giving up a couple of hits, but gets a big double play and gets an inning-ending strikeout. The disaster inning came in the seventh, and it starts with a decision to put Familia back out there for a second inning of work. When you do that, you just don't know if his control is going to hold up, and that's basically what happened. He just lost the strike zone. But I don't necessarily blame Rojas for starting the inning with Familia, or at least I can explain why he went that route. If he is looking at his bullpen, and if he doesn't trust Drew Smith in a close game, which I think he should, but he hasn't shown that he has that trust in him, he's trying to find a way to get nine outs using Familia, Barnes, and May. So I see why he'd rather push Familia to get more than an inning than Barnes or May. With that being said, you get to what happens, and Familia walks Eric Hosmer, gives up a base hit, then a sacrifice bunt, puts two runners in scoring position. Now the pinch hitter, Trent Grisham, comes in. Familia gets a strikeout, but he was gassed. I get letting him face Jerks and Profar. Maybe you get another strikeout. Now you have two outs. You're very close to escaping the jam. He doesn't, though. After getting ahead 1-2, he walks Profar on 8 pitches. So now there's the bases loaded. And this is where I have a problem with what Rojas did. You got to get Familia out of there, because there's nowhere to put Tommy Pham, and he is prone to walking batters. And he walks Pham on 4 pitches. Now the game's tied. Then you go to Jacob Barnes. He gives up a grand slam. But Barnes could have given up a grand slam to Tommy Pham. You know? He could have started the inning with Barnes, and Barnes could have got lit up anyway. To me, one of the big problems here is that Sean Reed Foley is not still in that bullpen, because he was one of the best arms the Mets had early on in the season. And he gives you length. So if you had Foley out there instead of Barnes, now I got a guy who has been striking out a ton of batters this season, who you can go to if you had to in mop-up duty, but more importantly, you wouldn't even get that far. You would throw Sean Reed Foley out there in this game with it close, knowing that you could get some length, and maybe he gets you through 8, and Trevor May can pitch the 9th. So I think not having Sean Reed Foley really hurts this team, because he was not only providing length, but high quality length. Length that I thought that would translate into high leverage situations, because he was striking out so many batters, because the whiff rate was so high on his pitches. People were not squaring up Sean Reed Foley. And that's why he should be in the bullpen instead of Jacob Barnes, instead of Robert Gazelman, instead of even Drew Smith, in my opinion. But when it comes to Rojas and his decision, I can follow his line of logic all the way up to where there's the bases loaded and you leave Familia in the game with a one-run lead. That's where I draw the line and say, look, you had to make a move there. And probably I would have pulled him after his first inning of work and just given Barnes a clean inning, because a lot of these guys, if you give them a clean inning, you have a better chance of getting a good result. It was past that top four in the lineup. You let Jacob Barnes face Eric Hosmer. I know that was maybe the at-bat that Rojas was looking at and wanted to keep Familia in for the strikeouts, but it's not like Familia and Hosmer have this great relationship or a great history in the past. We'll leave it at that, but I just can't sit here and rip into Rojas for this decision. I think he made a bad one, letting Familia face Tommy Pham. Again, if it was up to me, I would have gone straight to Barnes at the top of the inning, but I will credit Rojas for having this team in first place more than I'm going to knock him for losing a game that, honestly, I never expected the Mets to win. And I credit the Padres for some great pitching on Sunday, by Chris Paddock, and the fact that they kept the Mets off the board for the most part, just a two-run homer by Peraza and another run the Mets tacked on when the game was out of hand. It is really tough to make it through an entire series without getting burned by Fernando Tatis Jr. and a grand slam in the final game. You got to tip your cap. That's what they do, Slam Diego. They win a game there. The Mets win the series. That's the most important thing. The Mets are in first place. And now they will face off against another first place team in the Chicago Cubs. I will talk about that series in just a minute. But the best snack to eat when you're watching Mets versus Cubs is Built Bar. The best tasting protein bar ever. With so many amazing flavors to choose from, like my personal favorite, the Cookies and Cream Bar. These are protein bars that taste like candy bars. They come covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, and they're healthy. Built Bars come low in calories, low in sugar, but they are high in protein and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Whether it's the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, or Major League Baseball, BetOnline has you covered. They even have awards, TV shows, and reality TV with real-time updated odds and props, almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Before we get into the series preview, a quick update on the injured Mets. Louis Guillorme returned to the lineup this weekend, went 2-for-7 with a walk in 8 plate appearances, made some sensational plays out in the field. It was awesome to see him back in the lineup. Jeff McNeil is not too far behind. He began a rehab assignment on Sunday with the Brooklyn Cyclones, went 0-for-2, but played 5 innings at second base, looked like he was running comfortably. So he could be back maybe at some point at the end of this week, more likely next week. That's going to be a huge boost. And another player who's getting closer is Michael Conforto, who has started to test out that hammy by running 90 feet. A rehab assignment could be coming soon. But none of that will happen before the Mets take on the Cubs. The Cubs swept the Mets at the end of April, outscoring them 20-8 in that series. But that took place at Wrigley Field, and this is a battle of two great home teams where the Mets will be playing at Citi Field. The Cubs are 11 games over 500 right now. They are tied for first place in their division with the Milwaukee Brewers. Jake Arrieta will be going up against David Peterson in Game 1. Peterson has a 9.88 ERA over his last 4 starts. This is a make-or-break start for him. The Mets claimed Nick Schiappino off waivers. I believe that was Thursday or Friday last week. He is another option as a starting pitcher who's now on the 40. They have Jared Eichhoff. There's some guys who could be chomping at the bits to make this major league roster. And if Peterson has another lousy outing where he doesn't go deep for the Mets, it's getting to that time where they're going to have to make some tough decisions. But I really do believe in the ability of this staff with Jeremy Hefner and Jeremy Accardo to figure guys out. We saw them do that with Lucchese. I believe they can do that with Peterson. So that's going to be the most fascinating aspect of Game 1 of this series. Now on the other side with Arrieta, this is a pretty good matchup for the Mets. He's not the same pitcher who won a Cy Young all those years ago. He's pitching to a 4.97 ERA this season, a 6.40 ERA on the road. His last time out against the Padres, he was good. Allowed just one run over 5 innings pitched, but in his 6 previous starts, he was pitching to an 8.28 ERA. Then you go to Game 2, Alec Mills versus Taijuan Walker. Mills has a 6.08 ERA this season, but he's been pitching almost exclusively out of the bullpen. Has only made 1 start, so I don't even know how much length he's going to give Chicago. You gotta like the Mets' chances in Game 2 with Walker, who has been one of the best starters in baseball this year. 2.07 ERA, 1.32 ERA in his last six starts. Chicago has not announced a starter for Wednesday, but whoever it is, they will have to face off against Jacob DeGrom, who has a 0.52 ERA and 103 strikeouts in 64 innings pitched. I want to say that again. A 0.52 ERA in 103 strikeouts across 10 starts in 64 innings pitched. Good luck, Chicago. Final game of the series, Kyle Hendricks versus Marcus Stroman. Hendricks has actually really turned his season around, got off to a rocky start, but he's 6-0 in his last six starts with a 2.93 ERA. The one thing with Hendricks this year, he leads all of baseball in home runs allowed with 19. Now, no Mets pitcher this year has been more consistent than Marcus Stroman, who's taken the ball every fifth day. He's given the Mets length. He's delivered between 6 and 7 innings pitched in each of his last 7 starts, has allowed 3 runs or less in 6 of them, has a 2.49 ERA across that stretch, a 2.33 ERA on the season, and you just love him pitching in front of the Mets fans, where he seems to get a little extra boost from that home crowd. Overall, though, you look at the series, the Mets have Taijuan Walker, Jacob DeGrom, and Marcus Stroman all pitching. This is why I don't think they have to overreact and rush to add another starter, and this is why they should win this division, because those three guys continue start after start to be excellent. And when you get that type of pitching from three guys in your rotation, it doesn't really matter who those other two guys are. And the fact that Lucchesi has turned it around, the fact that I believe Peterson can turn it around, I understand why the Mets aren't panicking right now and rushing to make a trade for a starting pitcher. If at the deadline, you know you're not going to get Carrasco back, you know you can't trust Peterson or Lucchesi, then yeah, get a 4-starter that can slot into your playoff rotation. But right now, when it comes to this series and this season, having Marcus Stroman, Jacob DeGrom, and Taijuan Walker, that top three has put the Mets in this position. And that's why I expect them to win this series, because those three guys are going to be on the mound, and the only starting pitcher that you like for Chicago is Kyle Hendricks. So we'll see what happens. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. If you want to get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes, check out the Locked On Today podcast, hosted by Peter Bukowski. Locked On Today updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.